The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast is here to figure this all out, people. Free agency came on June 30th. It hit us with a bang. The Bucks made a bunch of moves. Everybody made a bunch of moves. It's all madness. And as far as the Milwaukee Bucks go, we can at least offer a little bit of clarity in, I think, what we can call an emergency podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. And the guy on the other line, he is the sensei of Milwaukee Bucks media coverage. That is Matt Velasquez. Matt, is your head still spinning? Have you slept? Have you had a chance to, I don't know, recombobulate after all this?
Yeah, my head is spinning less. I did get to sleep, but shout out to the NBA for moving free agency up 6 hours from previous years. You know, starting it at 5 o'clock. Well, you know, who are we kidding? It started way before that.
Yeah.
But officially starting at 5 o'clock on Sunday, and I thought, wow, like I'm gonna have to like stay up all night and whatever. And then you know, I realized, wait a second, the Bucks they did a bunch of things. They added, you know, one more move late into the night. You know, I kind of, you know, sent some feelers out and got the go-ahead. Hey, I can just go to bed. And I was in bed by midnight, which, you know, in years past, that's when things are just starting to heat up. So no staying up till all hours of the night. You know, there's still always a fear that you could wake up to something. But, you know, sleep is a good thing, and I embrace it. And thank you to the NBA. For shifting tampering hours up slightly.
Gotta think the NBA is going to keep this new format because the primetime version of free agency certainly was pretty crazy, pretty great on Sunday. Here's what the Bucks did, and by now you know most of this. They retained Chris Middleton. He did, in fact, sign close to max, not max deal, but pretty close to stay with the Bucks. Brooke Lopez is back. Malcolm Brogdon is going to be an Indiana Pacer. There's a sign-and-trade agreement after he was offered 4 years. $85 million, probably the highest end. We talked about $20 million a year. He got even more than that. Robin Lopez is coming to the Bucks, the twin brother of Brooke Lopez. And the team is re-signing George Hill to a pretty sizable deal. Of course, we'll talk about that. And then the news came Monday that Wes Matthews, Marquette University product, Madison Memorial product, is coming home to Wisconsin, or at least that's the report. That's a pretty active business for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were doing a plenty of stuff that I was able to you know, confirm just, you know, before things even officially started. And then within half an hour, boom, side and trade with Brogdon. You know, they've been busy, and it's only basically been a little bit more than 24 hours since this thing officially got going. It's still only July 1st as we're recording this, which is just wild. And I feel like we've already gotten a lot of the answers to the Bucks' summer plan or what they're going to do. Still some significant things that could potentially come. You never want to close the book on that, especially with all this time. We still have no idea where Kawhi Leonard is going, you know, or where he is, or if he has said any words to anyone about anything, you know, which, you know, could very well impact the balance of power in the East. So just lots of fun stuff still.
Let's start with the move that I think people had the most feelings about, and that's Malcolm Brogdon going elsewhere, going to the Indiana Pacers. That wasn't a team that he'd been linked to necessarily. He, again, offered a four-year, $85 million offer sheet in restricted free agency. The Bucks would have had every opportunity to match. They elected not to and negotiated with Indiana to get some draft picks in return, so they do get some players in return for signing and then trading Malcolm Brogdon. So this player, this glue guy who was, you know, kind of that straw that stirred the drink the last couple of years. He was a great find as a second round pick. Rookie of the year is now an Indiana Pacer. This decision, I know people were a little unhappy with. I know a lot of people like Malcolm Brogdon. He's very popular, as he should be. Very talented, very steady, solid player. He also missed a lot of time with a foot injury. It's about 60 games, which is a number that was being floated about as Bucks fans tried to sort of, you know, take inventory of the deal and try to reassure themselves that it wasn't such a big deal or a bad thing. But they will be without him this year, and it's not a guy you can easily replace. Are you surprised that the Bucks ultimately decided not to match here? And do you think the injury history was a big factor in ultimately getting them to decide maybe we let him go?
You know, I was surprised in the sense that this happened so quickly. You know, with restricted free agency, these things can take some time. You know, teams want to see how things materialize, you know, what other offers are going to be out there, you know, basically what the market is going to present for a player. And I think I even tweeted as such, and then a few minutes later, boom, Malcolm Brogdon is gone. So what do I know? But it's just one of those things where, you know, the Bucks did have every opportunity to re-sign him. It doesn't matter. You know, people say, oh, well, people think that he didn't want to be here. It's like, well, I don't care where he wants to be. If the Bucks want him to be there, you know, he can come back. You know, this is kind of how restricted free agency works. Usually, you know, there's every restricted free agent who isn't immediately going to be brought back to their team. You know, there are reports out there that somehow they're unhappy, that, you know, they feel like the incumbent team doesn't appreciate them, or they're not valued, or, you know, they have issues. It just happens all the time. I feel like it happened with Jabari Parker, which maybe it was true. I feel like that happened with, you know, like Marcus Smart when he had his long period with the Celtics where, you know, they were trying to figure out what to do with him. It's just a tough situation because the incumbent team, they want to get their player back for as little money as possible because that's a good business move. Whereas other teams want to figure out what the number is that they can offer to that player to make it worth their time that player would sign and they would get to keep him. Like, that is the best deal. And then, you know, if you're that team, you know, for instance, the Pacers, you don't want to offer a deal and then find out, oh no, the Bucks are just going to match it and keep him. You know, which, you know, and on one hand, maybe that's great for you if you're the Pacers because it pushes the Bucks into the luxury tax for the foreseeable future and it triggers the repeater tax, you know, a few years from now, or, you know, the repeater penalty. So you can work with that. But in general, you want the guy. That's why you're signing him to an offer sheet. So I think the reason why a trade like this would go down is that, you know, I'm sure there was some, you know, interest on Brogdon's side, you know, whether he or his agent or whoever indicated, hey, I want to actually go play in this place. This is a place I do want to sign an offer sheet when I can on July 6th. And, you know, once the Bucks found out the number, they're probably, okay, well, you want to go there. We could still sign you back. Like, we can still keep you. And we can, you know, we can absorb that amount of money. Like, they had his bird rights. They could keep him. But at the same time, you know, if they, you know, they could present to the Pacers, hey, we do want to keep him. So if you want him, instead of us matching, let's work out a trade, you know, and that's kind of where that would work, where, you know, it won't do you the favor because the Pacers wouldn't necessarily have been able to sign him at that number because of all the other signings they've done or whatever. But the Bucks can. So the Bucks say, hey, we'll sign him. We'll do you the favor of signing him and we can lock this up. But you need to send us something in return. And that something in return was a first round pick and 2 second round picks. And in this way, you know, as I mentioned before, I think the biggest driver of all of this, it's not about whether Malcolm Brogdon wanted to be back or he liked Milwaukee or whatever. All of that can just kind of fall by the wayside, you know, for now. The biggest thing here was that the Bucks, you know, are going to be able to avoid, you know, knock on wood, or, you know, as of right now, like looking at how the landscape is, they should be able to avoid the luxury tax this season. They should be able to construct a roster in such a way where they're not going to go into the tax. And yes, like, you can make a very valid argument that, you know, ownership is being cheap, that the window is open now. There is no juggernaut, like, dynastic team that is out there. KD and Kyrie, they're in Brooklyn. You know, the Warriors just traded Andre Iguodala. Klay Thompson's going to be hurt for a significant portion of the year. The Warriors are not the Warriors that they used to be. You know, and every team in the West is trying to load up, and teams in the East are loading up, and everyone's going to try and make a run at this thing. And, you know, the Bucks could have shot themselves in the foot by moving Malcolm Brogdon, a guy who, you know, has proven himself at the NBA level to be a high-level shooter and somebody who can make plays in playoff games, who can win you playoff games, who can be the second-best player on the team, which is saying something considering Giannis Antetokounmpo is the number one player on the team no matter what happens. Like, Brogdon can be that guy. I mean, but he also could be hurt. He also, you know, could be somebody who, you know, is better suited as a role player. And, you know, maybe if he had a bigger role, you know, maybe he doesn't do some of the things that he does. And as a role player, do you pay him the, you know, over $20 million a year? And so this kind of maybe a long way of saying that the Bucks had to make a decision. Do we want to pay the tax on Malcolm Brogdon in order to, is that the path that we need to take to stay relevant and to compete for the championship because our window is now? Or can we avoid paying the tax for this year, something that they'll probably start having to do very soon, probably as soon as next year. You know, Giannis is coming up for the Supermax, and they can start that sooner. And then suddenly you have a ton of money on the books, and you're going to go into the tax. So can we avoid if we're the Bucks, can we avoid the tax for one more year, avoid the repeater penalty, which even, like, you know, the richest teams, the teams that, you know, are willing to spend, they try and avoid the repeater tax as much as possible because of how expensive it can get quickly. And so can you avoid paying the tax while still building a team that is able to compete at the highest level? And we're not going to have the answer to that now. You know, we'll see what the Bucks do during the rest of free agency, who else they bring in, how they bolster this roster, and then eventually how that roster plays out. You know, it could very well be the case, like I said, that they messed up big time, that Malcolm Brogdon was a piece that they needed, a player that they needed to make this whole thing work, and that they're going to be worse off for it. And it could also be the case that they could find enough replacement players to not totally, maybe totally replace what he did, maybe partially replace what he did. Maybe his injury history does limit him. No one is wishing for that. Everyone hopes Malcolm will be healthy in every future game that he plays. But, you know, it's possible that the Bucks, you know, could find a way to make a team work without him and stay under the tax. It's going to be hard. And it definitely shows, you know, maybe an unwillingness of ownership to pony up at the time that you need to pony up, you know, especially, like I said, with the window open. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. And one more thing, just when it comes to Malcolm Brogdon, you know, kudos to him for getting paid, for securing the bag, because, you know, he has spent his first 3 NBA seasons, he won a Rookie of the Year award, and he still, you know, was on the type of salary that you get when you are a second round pick. You know, I'm not going to say that, you know, 3.7 or whatever it was, like less than $4 million is nothing. It's definitely a significant amount of money. You take taxes out of that, and it's still a significant amount of money to the average person. But in terms of NBA money, in terms of like really big deal money, like he wasn't getting that. He hadn't made that yet. So this was his time, you know, at age 26, you know, his first shot at free agency to make a significant, you know, life-changing, amount of money, the kind of money that, you know, that just changes your life, but changes the life of your kids and their kids. Like, this is, you know, $85 million. Like, that's huge. And who knows how many big paydays he'll have left. Like, right when he finishes this contract, he'll be 30 years old. And who knows what he'll be? Who knows what any player will be, you know, when they go from 26 to 30. So you want to get that money, and you want to get it as quickly as possible. And you want to, you know, find a way to better your life. And, you know, I don't judge him for that, because I would do the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's hard to look at it if you're a fan this way, but they were getting a deal with Malcolm Brogdon the last 3 years. Like, he was a value player because they got him in the second round, and just an exceptional draft selection who I think will be remembered for providing some pretty big moments to the Milwaukee Bucks in their run to the Eastern Conference Finals. But it is interesting, we're talking a lot about the luxury tax, because there were some comments by John Horst that sort of led us all to believe the luxury tax wasn't going to be a factor at all, that they were completely prepared to pay into the tax. And I know a lot of the moves are made with Giannis in mind, with the Supermax deal that he's going to fetch this time next season probably, and the way that they're going to have to work with the cap then. There's a lot of money considerations, and it's not just financial. After a while, if you get too high into the, you know, across the tax apron, or get that repeater's luxury tax, like you said, all things that are just sort of behind the scenes, but there does come a point where it starts to limit what you can do with your roster and some of the exceptions you can use. So you can't just chalk it up to just saving money on the books. Speaking of money on the books, Chris Middleton got paid also. Big time deal. It's the biggest, he's the highest paid, biggest contract in Bucks history, which, you know, is sort of a throwaway thing to say. There'll be a new biggest contract in Bucks history next year. But
well, no, if you're a Bucks fan, fingers crossed for that.
Yes, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Jeez.
There's no saying that, you know, but it isn't set in stone. But the hope in Milwaukee among Bucks fans is that there will be a new biggest salary in Bucks history that will remain the biggest salary in Bucks history for the foreseeable future.
I mean, one of the major issues with keeping Giannis is the idea of keeping the guys around him that have helped make him and helped make him successful, have been successful along with him. Chris Middleton fits that bill. The thing you hear still, even though we've tried to explain how it works, how the max deal was just something that was going to happen for him, and again, it wasn't quite a max deal, although pretty close, is people viewing him as overpaid, because you see the other guys getting the max deals, and no, they're not, yes, they're bigger names than Chris Middleton. Can you help explain why people just should not get hung up on that dollar figure, that the dollar figure isn't something that really was going to change all that much?
Well, I think the best way to put it is that if the Bucks couldn't find a dollar amount that Chris Middleton was willing to sign, he would have gotten signed elsewhere. He would have gotten a 4-year max or near max deal from somebody else. And then the problem with that is that the Bucks really wanted to bring back Brook Lopez, really did. And so they did. And we can talk about that later. But in doing that, they had to use cap space. And so in using that cap space, if you don't sign Chris Middleton and you let him walk, but you say, hey, we do want Brook Lopez, you don't have max cap space to bring in anyone else. You would have, I mean, I'm just trying to remember the numbers off the top of my head, but if you didn't sign Middleton and you renounced everyone else, you brought back Brook Lopez, the Bucks would have had somewhere in the low 20 million range to bring back other free agents. So they have Brook Lopez back, but they wouldn't have enough money to sign another marquee max level free agent. They just wouldn't have it. They would have to trade or sign Ilyasova for probably nothing. Probably take him and maybe the Pacers pick that they're going to get and just send him off somewhere, maybe with John Lure, and like maybe then they could create max space. But then what do you have? You know, who are you getting? What is your plan? And that's what we've been talking about for years about Chris Middleton, that people have been worried that he was going to get a big contract in free agency. And the question always was, what is your plan? Who is your plan to replace him? Because if you're not going to get an all-star level player, a star level player, or whatever you want to do, if you can't get someone who's better than Chris Middleton, then you've just decimated your roster for, you know, basically nothing. Or you could have just not signed Brook Lopez back, but then who are you going to replace him with? You know, there's just so many moving pieces here that, you know, the Bucks just didn't have the flexibility, you know, to realistically sign someone better than Chris Middleton if they had not brought back Chris Middleton. So you say, hey, Chris, we value you. You've been here, you know, for a significant amount of your career. You've been here all the way through the rebuild. We want to bring you back. We'll give you max years. So that's 5. No one else can give you 5. We'll give you stability. Give you long-term, a long-term contract to stay in Milwaukee. And let's figure out a number that's not $190 million. Like, let's see how much you're willing to give back. You know, and he did take something of a discount. You know, $178 million is a ton of money. But he could have played hardball and he could have said, hey, I want $190 million or I'm out, you know, and then the Bucks, you know, would have been stuck. So instead they found a number that both sides were comfortable with. You know, it allows the Bucks to save a little bit of money instead of paying him $32.7 million this year, which would have been on a max deal, max years and max money. Now they're probably somewhere around $30.6 million. I mean, so that's $2 million off the cap this year. I mean, and you would include, you know, perennial raises at a specific rate, and then you get up to the $178 million. So I think with Chris Middleton, like, that was basically the no-brainer for the Bucks, was if we can't get anyone better than Chris Middleton, and maybe they looked, maybe they tried, maybe tried to figure out what the market looked like and if any of those bigger names might be interested in coming to Milwaukee. But if you can't get anybody, you know, that is a bigger name or a bigger star or a bigger talent than Chris Middleton, then you already know that he can succeed alongside Giannis. You already know that at 6'8", with 3-point shooting ability, you know, defensive versatility, really good passing, all the things that Chris Middleton brings, you already know that all that fits, and the chemistry is really good, and that this is something that can work. This is something that got the Bucks, you know, within 2 games of the NBA Finals. So you kind of try and double down on that, And you know, with the way all these contracts are going around, like Chris Middleton in a couple of years wouldn't be untradeable. You know, that's not a toxic asset in any way, in the sense that as long as he can still be a contributor, maybe down the road, you know, you can figure out something that might work in terms of moving on or finding a trade partner and trying to do something different. So you have that contract. It's not terrible. And you can work with it.
Yeah, I know that even with you, just everything you explained, I know that this year people are going to really be putting the microscope on Chris Middleton. And I hope that...
Well, just like last year.
Yeah,
like
year but even before. Worse, because now he's getting paid. So I hope that declines a little bit, because it's pretty clear, and we've talked about this, people don't know how good he is. I mean, they really undervalue him because they see him every day and he's not a superstar. And I don't know if it's a comparison with Giannis side by side, or just seeing other guys that they see in spurts and they view them as more reliable than Chris Middleton. But like, Chris Middleton is such a good basketball player and such a huge asset for this team. And I hope that somewhere along the way that people will start to realize that.
Well, you might be barking up the wrong tree. Who knows? We'll see how people handle it. I'm not sure they'll always handle it perfectly. There are very strong advocates on either side of the Chris Middleton camp. And you know, that's just going to be how it is. But I think it's very fair to say that if Chris Middleton did not sign with the Bucks for the amount that he signed with the Bucks and they let him go, there would have been a team with max cap space that would have said, hey, Chris Middleton, come on down, you know, because he is somebody who fits. Like, he, you know, you don't just find 6'8" guys who can defend multiple positions, who can shoot the three, who can pass the way he can pass, you know, who can also rebound, you know, and just be a shot creator on their own, who have that mid-range game that he has, like just all the different things that he can do. They're not everywhere in the NBA. You can't just find those guys everywhere. And so, you know, he isn't flashy. He isn't, you know, loud. He isn't somebody who, you know, maybe that last year was his one all-star game. Maybe he doesn't go back to an all-star game. Maybe he's not a perennial all-star. You know, there's a chance that he could be, but maybe that's just not in the cards for him, you know. But at the same time, that doesn't devalue the fact that, you know, he is a high-level performer who would have gotten the max, or at least a comparable salary over 4 years to the one that he got with the Bucks over five.
It's a little bit like when a school gets money earmarked for a certain project, like new floor tiles or something, and you say to yourself, well, why aren't we getting new computers? We need those, or new textbooks. Well, this is what the money is for. They're really nice floor tiles. He's a lot better than just floor tiles. He's really valuable, and you got to love what you got with him, knowing that they just weren't going to be able to spend that money the same way that I know people would have wanted it to be spent.
And outside of that one freak hamstring injury that he had, he's been incredibly dependable.
That's right.
You know? And so I'm sure that factored into the decision making that the Bucks had, you know, because, you know, yes, like, could the Bucks have not signed Chris Middleton and instead had gotten Brooke Lopez, you know, some middle of the road guys, you know, for like whatever the rest of their cap space was, and then brought back Malcolm Brogdon and stayed under the tax? Yes, they could have. Like, that could have been a route that they went. But, you know, I don't think, you know, I'm sure they looked into it. They look into everything. That's part of their due diligence, and I get that. But I don't think that was necessarily one of their top, you know, thought processes. I don't think they went super far down that road. I think that it, you know, taken in a vacuum, if you had to say which player is the better NBA player, the better person, you know, Middleton's only a year older or 2 years older than Brogdon. You know, which guy is, you know, somebody you want to commit to long term? I think that most basketball people would probably say Chris Middleton. I'm sure, and there are good arguments for Malcolm Brogdon. We just haven't seen him do it for as long as possible. Maybe last year. I mean, 50-40-90 is insanely good shooting. But can he repeat that? Like, can he do it again? Can he do it if he is consistently the number two option on a really good team? As opposed to with the Bucks, where, you know, he might have been the second best player on any given night, but he wasn't necessarily the biggest threat on the court, or even the second biggest threat on the court, you know, a decent amount of time that he played. So, yes, the Bucks could have gone that direction. They could have hitched their wagon to Malcolm Brogdon. I think that also, you know, somewhat sends a message to other free agents in the future. Hey, you know, you've spent all these years, six seasons now that Chris has been in Milwaukee. You spent all the six of those years building up this team, taking it from, you know, being part of taking it from nothing, 15 wins, and, you know, kind of being there every step of the way, being a leader, doing everything the right way, sacrificing in his last year of his contract, where, you know, he gave up more than I think anybody else did on the team last year in terms of the shots that he liked to get in certain places and touches. And his touches were probably similar, but he played a lot fewer minutes. And all the things that he did, he definitely had to change his game the most. And so he sacrificed for the team. He did all those things. It's like, oh, yeah, and now, like, get out the door. Like, I think that might not play well with the free agents, people who might be looking to come into Milwaukee. You want to see players who are treated fairly, treated well. I think that, you know, there's a reason why the Bucks chose Chris Middleton.
Also, I will not hear any slander about his play in that Toronto series. He was guarding Kawhi Leonard, who was on an all-time carpet ride of greatness through the playoffs. I will not tolerate people saying that Chris Middleton failed to show up in that series. Let's talk about Brook Lopez. He's back. I think we all thought that was going to happen. I personally thought that the mid-level exception was going to be how they were able to keep him. But he just commanded too much money. It was going to be too much money to use that exception. I kind of want to know a little bit if they still have access to that exception, or there was talk of a trade exception, which maybe we talk about with, you know, as we get down the line here, George Hill, things like that. I'm just trying to figure out what's still available to them, and then I guess the thought of bringing Brook Lopez back. I mean, am I right that seemed like a pretty sure thing?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that of all the moves, I think I mentioned it on this podcast maybe, but I thought the things I was most confident about were Brook Lopez and Chris Middleton. I think those two guys, like, yes, they had the restricted free agency of Malcolm Brogdon and could bring him back, but that seemed like a bigger question. Brook Lopez was just so critical to what the Bucks did on both ends, and there really isn't somebody on the market who they could have gotten to replace what he offered. And so, you know, the Bucks were absolutely thrilled with what they got from him last season, and he bet on himself and he bet big, you know, taking that biannual exception, that $3.4 million for one season, in hopes of proving that he was worth even more than that for the long term. And so he got that 4-year deal with the Bucks worth $52 million. And, you know, the market, if the Bucks had said, hey, Brooke, all we have is a mid-level exception for you, that's all we're going to give you, he probably would have walked, because the market would have given him, you know, more than that. Other teams recognized what he did and how he spaced the floor and the defensive value that he brought. He was not known as a stalwart defender when he came to Milwaukee. And last year he contested more shots than anybody in the NBA. And the Bucks were the best team at defending at the rim. And they were the best team defending inside the arc, you know, overall. And so, you know, Brook Lopez was a big part of that. And the Bucks, you know, they made the wise decision of not trying to lowball him, you know, moving Tony Snell and getting John Lure back, you know, while it didn't really look great at the time, especially giving up the 30th pick. Like, that was the move they needed to make I'm not saying that was the move they needed to make. Maybe they could have made other moves, who knows? But that move did allow them to have the cap space to sign Brook Lopez immediately upon free agency opening. Or not sign, but agree to sign. Nothing can be signed until July 6th. We're getting caught up in semantics here. But, you know, allowed them to agree to a contract with Brook Lopez right at the beginning at a number that he was willing to take that was market value and fair. But you mentioned other numbers. So if you are low enough below the cap to use cap space, which the Bucks will do when they sign Brook Lopez, you no longer have access to the mid-level exception. You are basically renouncing the option to use that exception, because that exception is in place for teams that don't have money below the cap, that don't have space below the cap to use. And so they don't have that. They can't use it. What they can use and did use on Brook's twin brother Robin was the room mid-level exception, which is a smaller deal. It doesn't involve being hard capped in any way or anything like the mid-level exception would. But they used the room mid-level exception, which is a little bit under $4.8 million in the first season, with, you know, a raise in the second year to get around 2 years, $10 million. They used that on Robin Lopez to bring him in as the backup to Brook, which I'm sure Brook will love, in the sense that he can say, hey, Robin is my backup. You know, because Brooke is the older one, and so he, you know, he likes to tout that. So it'll be really fun. But we can get to the funness of the Lopez brothers being together. But I think as a basketball fit, I think it makes sense. Robin is not the 3-point bomber that Brooke is. At least he has not shown that side of his game very often. I think he took somewhere around like 33 pointers last season. But that also might not have been called upon from him, you know, in the places he's been. You know, John Henson wasn't much of a 3-point shooter, and then suddenly he, you know, Mike Budenholzer shows up, and John Henson's shooting threes, and he's doing it somewhat proficiently. So we'll see if Robin Lopez can do that. But, you know, Robin is a guy who is a strong, physical, proven, like, defender. He's somebody who, on a second unit, can be a stabilizing force. You know, he can be physical inside. I mean, if you look at teams in the East, especially the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that could be one of the top contenders with the Bucks next season, like, you can consistently throw a Lopez at Joel Embiid. I mean, that there's something to say for that. And the Bucks didn't have that type of physicality in their backup centers last season. Like, you know, they were basically using Ersan Ilyasova, who, you know, takes charges but is not really a true backup center size wise or they throw Giannis there, and like that takes a lot out of him, having to bang against centers like that. So I think, you know, Robin will be able to, you know, provide that kind of size and physicality consistency no matter what the Bucks do in terms of shifting between Lopez's at different points in the game. He's somebody who, like his brother, tends to make the team he's on better at rebounding. He you know, boxes out really well, and allows other guys to get rebounds. So his rebounding numbers aren't high, just like Brooks. But when Brooke came to the Bucks, they were one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. And last year, they were one of the best. If you go by defensive rebound percentage, they were the best. So those are important things to keep in mind. You know, Robin Lopez is somebody who would have been sought after and probably was sought after by other teams to try and fit into that room mid-level exception range. I think other guys like Ed Davis, Frank Kaminsky, those types of players got the money that fits into that exception for other teams and other deals. And so that was going to be the money that the Bucks needed to spend in order to get, you know, that true backup center that they haven't had for a while. And so I think that's a pretty good move for the Bucks to shore that up.
And of course, we won't spend much time on it, but just to mention that Robin Lopez is as fun-loving, as much of a personality as Brooke Lopez is. They have this faux enemy setup where they pretend to hate each other. But of course, Robin came to the playoffs to watch his brother play. They obviously went to Stanford together. They've been very close their whole lives. Their cats hate each other. They've been taking shots at each other for years, and it's going to be really fun to see that up close now that they're on the same team. Good grief, is that going to be a good time?
I'm going to go on record and say that I'm going to project that Brooke and Robin are on opposite sides of the locker room next year.
I don't, no doubt.
That like Robin will move into like Malcolm Brogdon's locker. Brooke will obviously stay at his own, but then Robin will go to like Malcolm's, which is basically as far away from Brooke as you can get. That's just my projection for how they set up the locker room next year, but we'll see.
It's going to be a lot of fun. They're both really cool, cool personalities. It's cool that there are guys in the NBA who don't take themselves so seriously, and yet obviously have had a lot of success. So George Hill's the other big one. He is back. They waived him, as everyone expected they would, as part of just a process to save money. But then they signed him to a pretty hefty deal. I think that opened some eyes. I don't know if people thought that George Hill would be back on that amount of money. What was your reaction to that, and does that hamstring them at all by committing that much money to a guy that, I mean, we all loved him last year, he was great, but I still think he is a backup point guard for the most part, although who knows, maybe that's not the case this year. What'd you think of that?
Well, I thought that he was somebody that they were, you know, they expressed interest in keeping towards the end of the season. He was somebody who he expressed interest in staying. He thought it was a good fit. The Bucks thought it was a good fit. Mike Budenholzer, you know, really liked him, and especially when he could get him to be aggressive and play aggressively in the way he could fit into you know, either guard position. He closed a bunch of games in the playoffs, and really, you know, like I said, he fit well, like a really strong veteran presence, you know, all that type of stuff. And I think in terms of the money, like, he would have gotten that money somewhere else. I mean, he could have fit into somebody's mid-level exception, if they chose to use it on him. You know, he still has some good years left. He's a proven winner. There are a bunch of teams out there with cap space that could have, you know, used it on him. And, you know, I think that in order to get him back, the Bucks were going to need to pay, you know, a fair price, since they didn't have access to the mid-level exception. You know, they're going to have to do some gymnastics in order just to get him back. There are multiple ways they can do it. They don't have to do it immediately. You know, they just have to make the cap space before they sign him. And they're going to have to order these signings in a particular way. Chris Middleton will probably be the last official signing they actually make, because his cap hold of $19.5 million instead of, you know, 30.6, that is what allows them to be under the cap. And since they have his bird rights, they can go over the cap to sign him. So sign everyone else first, make sure you fill up that cap space, and then here we go with Chris. So, you know, so getting him back at that deal should be pretty good. It's probably market value. He would have gotten that somewhere else. The important thing to me was that I was able to report that the third year of that deal is only partially guaranteed. So 3 years, $29 million, starting probably somewhere in the 9 range, 9.1 or something like that. You know, it basically could work out to being 2 years and $19 million guaranteed. I'm not sure about what the exact guarantee number is, but the third year is only partially guaranteed. So the Bucks aren't committing, you know, all the way with George Hill in that third year, which could make him a trade asset at that point if he's still on the team. You know, being able to move off somebody who only has a partial guarantee, we know how that is. They brought him in because he only had a partial guarantee on his contract, and that way you could waive him and open up the cap space and do things like that. So it'll be interesting to see what that guarantee eventually comes out to. But, you know, maybe projecting it as maybe only being on the hook for 2 years, $20 million of George Hill, like, that's, I think there's value in that, and you're not committing super long term to somebody who is already a veteran, who already has more than a decade in the league. You're not kind of hamstringing yourself by going too long, but you are giving him some stability for a couple of years, and then a partial guarantee on the third. But, you know, the common thinking is that the Bucks would have to waive and stretch John Lewis's contract, and in doing so. You know, Albert Namad, cap expert extraordinaire, on Twitter, you know, I saw him doing some of the Lord's work out there, you know, throughout the start of free agency. But it's potentially possible for the Bucks to execute things in such a way where they would sign and trade Brogdon to the Pacers. They'd get the stuff back. And if they renounce the trade exception, or it would involve renouncing the trade exception that they got from the Pacers. The trade exception would be in the ballpark of $10 to $12 million that they would get back. But if they can make an extra $700,000 in space. So if they were to waive and stretch Lure, and they also get that little bit of extra money, that would give them enough in cap space to sign George Hill into cap space, which is the only way they can bring him back at the number that we've seen. So they would lose the trade exception, which, you know, that does hurt in some way, because, you know, a $10-12 million trade exception that could open the door to bringing someone else in. The way trade exceptions work is that you cannot use a trade exception to sign a free agent. You can only use a trade exception to receive more money than you send out in a trade. So if you have a $10 million trade exception, and you can trade a player who's making $5 million for a player who makes $15 million, and you're good.
And crucially, they have a player who's making $7 million in Ersan Ilyasova, so they could, in theory, get a guy making $17 million coming back.
Theoretically, yes. And so if you had that type of, if you still had that trade exception, you could do that. But if you don't have the trade exception, it could allow the Bucks to have the wiggle room that they need to waive and stretch John Lure and get George Hill back, and everything's hunky dory.
Yes,
that doesn't need to be what that doesn't mean that's exactly what they have to do. You know, they will have these these draft picks from the Pacers. In theory, they could use the draft picks at Sweetener to get off of Lure's contract entirely, move Ersan Ilyasova or whatever. So people have mentioned, like, oh, well, what about Eric Bledsoe? Can they trade him? No, they can't trade him until September 4th, which is still before the season, but you're not going to wait all the way until then to, like, sign all these guys. It seems unreasonable. So we're going to have to figure this out before that, I would expect. And so, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, we'll see over the next week or so what the Bucks intend to do to create that cap space, because they can't sign George Hill until they create the cap space, which would either necessitate a trade or waiving and stretching John Lure. And the simplest path, like I said, would be waiving and stretching Lure. Then you get Hill back, you get Lopez, get other Lopez, you get West. You know, we haven't gotten to Wes Matthews, but now you're just
he's next. We'll talk about him.
Basically, and getting all those guys that I just mentioned, you get Middleton, you get Lopez, you get other Lopez, you get George Hill, you lose Malcolm Brogdon, you waive and stretch John Lure, and in doing so, you also net a first-round pick from the Pacers, 2 second-round picks from the Pacers, and now your cap is totally taken. The Bucks will no longer have any cap space. They will not have any more exceptions. They're done, which means all they can do is either make trades, but they would have to match salaries, or they would be left to signing guys to minimum contracts, which they did with Wesley Matthews.
And that is where we are now. So to get you caught up, that's George Hill, 3 years, $29 million. Brook Lopez, 4 years, $52 million. Chris Middleton, 5 years, $178 million. And now what you're saying here, this is something you've talked about a lot on the podcast, that the Bucks are in position to get some of these quote unquote ring chasers, guys who are, they just want to win, man. And they don't care. They're veterans. They don't necessarily need a big payday, or maybe they're not quite good enough to get one, but they're now capable of getting guys who are interested in this sort of thing. And that includes maybe Pau Gasol, who was with the team this past year, and Wes Matthews, Marquette University product of Madison Memorial High School, state champion when he was in Wisconsin, one of the better boys basketball players in state history. And now he is coming back on a minimum salary. And I think that's probably indicative of just the Bucks being really good. I'm sure the hometown thing helps, but, you know, Matthews has been in the league 10 years and he hasn't felt the need to come home. I think it's more about where they are. And I'm curious if that's it. If you think that the Bucks are still going to be looking for more guys in that veteran capacity, or if this roster, I mean, they have kind of everything they need. I feel like they'd probably be pretty much done in general, but I could be wrong there.
Well, I mean, they're not going to be done until they get the roster full. And so if they waive Lure, they'll still have 3 more spots potentially to fill. And in signing all those guys to minimum contracts, the only contracts they can sign players to at this point, that, you know, as we expect, they'll stay under the luxury tax. And so they can, you know, just, and the NBA has a pretty neat rule where they don't want to discourage players or discourage teams from signing veteran players to minimum contracts, because veteran players on a minimum contract, you know, they make a little bit more. So like Wes Matthews will make $2.5 million, but by NBA rules, the Bucks are only really on the hook for $1.6 million of that, because, you know, they don't want teams to say, oh, well, I'd rather sign a guy with 1 or 2 years of experience instead of this guy with 10 years of experience because he costs more. So this way, players with more experience make a higher amount of money, even on a minimum contract. But the teams don't have to pick and choose, based on age or based on experience. So, you know, no matter what, each player is only going to be on the hook for a small enough number that the Bucks can stay under the luxury tax if they only sign minimum guys. They don't do anything crazy with trades or anything like that. There are still guys out there. I mean, if they waive and stretch Lure, they'll still have 3 spots. If they don't, they'll have 2. And I don't know that they necessarily need young guys. Maybe they try and use their 2 ways, or maybe use maybe their last roster spot on a younger, more developmental type guy who they think is a good value that they can get for multiple years or something like that. But they want guys who can help now and who can add depth and you know, positive traits to this team. And Wes Matthews, like, yes, he's not the same player he was before his Achilles injury a few years ago. You know, he's not necessarily going to be a star. He's not going to be Malcolm Brogdon. Like, but, you know, when you're paying him a minimum salary and you're getting a guy who is a career 38% three-point shooter, who shoots really well on catch and shoot and wide open threes, who was a starting level player for a playoff team last year. He was initially on Dallas. He got bought out, or he got traded to the Knicks, got bought out, and then signed with the Pacers, started every game he played with them at regular season and into the playoffs after Victor Oladipo's injury. You know, was counted on as somebody who, you know, could be a consistent scorer, playmaker, starter for them. And he's also a pretty solid defender. He's not as quick as he used to be, but he's tough and he bothers players. So if you can have that kind of guy on a minimum deal, not fully filling in for Brogdon, but helping to fill in for Brogdon, I think there's a lot of good value there. I think that's a good signing. You add him to your stable of backup guards, and now you have, you know, Pat Connaughton, George Hill, Sterling Brown, Dante DiVincenzo, Wesley Matthews. One of those guys will very likely start for the Bucks. I'm not sure who. Maybe it'll change over the course of the year. But, you know, now you have options. You have proven guys. You have offensive shooting, defensive toughness from multiple guys at that position, some versatility. I think it's all good stuff. And to be able to find more players like that, more, you know, high value, high upside guys who can contribute now, I think is going to be the challenge for John Horst and the Bucks as they go through the rest of this offseason.
You know, we haven't even talked about the story that probably kind of broke before all of this, that Nikola Mirotic is not re-signing with the Bucks or anyone in the NBA. He's going back overseas. He's going to sign with Barcelona of the Euro League and leave kind of a pretty good earning potential in the NBA on the table to do it. That, I'm assuming, caught you by surprise like everybody else. That seemed to be a pretty big shock when the news broke there.
Yeah, I mean, I never really expected him to come back to the Bucks, just because they had, you know, all indications were that they really wanted to sign Brook Lopez. They really wanted to sign Chris Middleton. George Hill was a potential guy they could bring back. Maybe they wanted to bring Malcolm Brogdon back. Like, all those guys, like, they were ahead of Mirotic. And his cap hold and renouncing that cap hold was going to be the thing that would allow them to do all those things. Because you can't sign Brook Lopez if you don't renounce Nikola Mirotic to clear that cap space. So, you know, it just didn't seem like a fit for him, even though they had his bird rights. So I expected he was going somewhere else. But if you asked me if it would be in this country, I'd say, well, there's a pretty good chance unless he goes to the Raptors. Like, that's all I would have thought about. But he's going to Spain, and, you know, apparently he has good reason to go. I would assume he does. I mean, he is, a Spanish national. Like, he does play for the national team. You know, even though he's Montenegrin by birth, he is a Spanish citizen. Maybe there's family reasons. Maybe there's personal reasons. Maybe he just loves Barcelona. I don't know. But all the power to him, and I hope he's happy.
Yeah, he was Nikola Mirotic. We barely knew you. He was an interesting trade acquisition last year. Did not fully pan out, I think, as everybody hoped. But you wish him well. Bucks do retain his bird rights, for what that's worth, for the time being, unless they decide to renounce him. And it sounds like the contract is for 5 or 6 years in Barcelona, so he probably won't be back at that point. But that is the case. Let's, before I let you go, look at what's going on elsewhere. And obviously there's a ton of moves. We really can't focus on all of them, but, you know, Brooklyn gets Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. That's probably the splashiest maneuvering that we saw in the Eastern Conference. The Boston Celtics getting Kemba Walker. Al Horford goes to the 76ers. A lot of people didn't see that coming, but Jimmy Butler now going to the Miami Heat. And I'm just scratching the surface of all the various maneuvers that were made. I'm just looking at some of the Eastern Conference ones. Obviously guys like D'Angelo Russell going to the Golden State Warriors, also big stories. Kawhi is the biggest storyline still to unfold. We don't know where he's going to go. But as you look at it now, Matt, you've seen what the Bucks have done. I think it's hard to argue that they're a ton better because they did lose Brogdon, but I don't think they're a ton worse. And, you know, coming in as the best team in the NBA last year, do you think the Bucks are still, would you still look at them as the best team in the Eastern Conference at this point? Or are they kind of maybe looking up at somebody like maybe the 76ers at this point?
I think it would be, I mean, it's still hard to know because I think if Kawhi Leonard goes back to the Raptors, I think Danny Green would go with him. And the Raptors would be able to, for the most part, keep their core.
Yeah, then they're the best team. Toronto should be the favorite if that's the case.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Obviously, the 76ers lost J.J. Redick. They lost Jimmy Butler. But they did re-up Tobias Harris for, you know, 5 years, $180 million, basically the same contract as Middleton. You know, and they're, I guess they're somewhat comparable players.
Chris Middleton is actually a little better than Tobias Harris. I know Bucks fans don't like the fact that they lost him, but I would take Middleton. That's just me.
I mean, there's a debate to be had. So, you know, I think that in keeping Tobias Harris and now bringing in Al Horford, they're going to be huge. You know, I mean, you look at that starting lineup potential of, you know, Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, who is coming from the Heat in that Butler deal, as somebody who could potentially start for them. And then you add in Al Horford, Joel Embiid. I'm trying to think who else is in Tobias Harris. I mean, that is a very large starting lineup. That's almost like that Mega Bucks lineup that the Bucks brought out there where Middleton was the smallest guy in that game against Utah last season, where it was Middleton, Ilyasova, Mirotić, Giannis, and Lopez. You know, and the 76ers can do that every night because those guys are actually in the positions that they would normally play, which is bonkers. I don't know exactly what their depth is going to look like. I don't know like what their whole team's going to look like, but they look like a team that could be, you know, among the top teams in the Eastern Conference. There's no doubt about that. I don't know what the Celtics are going to look like. I know that Kemba Walker, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, that's a pretty quality core, and there's still moves that they could potentially make, and I'm sure there's, you know, still going to be tinkering, and Danny Ainge will be looking around the league to find out what he can do, you know, but as of right now, like, they could be a contender. The Nets, they're probably not going to have Kevin Durant next season, at least for the regular season. Maybe sometime in the playoffs. You never know with an Achilles how long that's going to take. You know, it could take about a year for him to actually be able to get going again. And obviously that injury occurred in June. So I think next year is probably going to be a foundational year for the Nets. Obviously they had a really great year last year. And they got back to the playoffs. They were scrappy and they were fun. And I throw supreme leader Kyrie Irving in there. You know, he makes chemistry better. But you bring him in there.
Yes, he is a chemistry set is what he is. There are lots of explosions.
Yeah, you know, just call him Heisenberg. That's fine. But so you put Kyrie in there, you put Kevin Durant in there as in kind of like a, I don't know, almost like assistant coach role or whatever he's gonna do. I don't know that they'll be a top contender this year. But give it a couple years, and that's a team that could be really scary. The Pacers, I mean, I think they got better. When you get Victor Oladipo back, you bring in Malcolm Brogdon. They brought in Jeremy Lamb. They brought in a bunch of, like, solid dudes. TJ Warren from the Suns. You know, they lost Thad Young, so we won't have any more of the Central Division. Actually, no, we'll still have that because Thad Young's going to the Bulls. We'll get a lot of Thad Young in Giannis moments. Fun times. So that'll be good. But I think the East in general is just kind of retooling and getting stronger. But I still see the Bucks in the same position I saw them last year, which was, you know, I expect them to be one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference, you know, and I expect them to have a home series, you know, home court advantage in the first round, you know, and depending on what happens with Toronto, I still think that the Bucks would be one of the top teams. I think it's between them and Philly right now in my mind. Obviously, Kawhi's decision notwithstanding. But you know, they're going to have their hands full. It's going to be tougher in the East, and I think it'll be more fun for us to watch.
All right. We got to get moving here. This has already gone on long enough, but one last thought, is there anything else that you're looking for right now in the next few days? I mean, do you think the Bucks will have another move or two to make here, or is there going to be a little bit of a latent period? What are you still curious about now that all these moves have transpired?
you know, I'm just trying to figure out which minimum veterans that they can find out there who can fit in and kind of bolster their lineup. Maybe they need another small forward type guy to fit in behind Chris Middleton. I mean, right now they have their guards, you know, pretty well stocked. You know, even if you consider them guards and wings, they're pretty well stocked, but you don't have anybody with that Middleton type size. You don't have a long, like 6'8", like 3-and-D type backup for him. I mean, you can try and fudge it a little bit, and you can get those minutes out of, you know, maybe DJ Wilson and slide him down a position, or maybe you can get those minutes out of, you know, Sterling Brown or Pat Connaughton if you go small and you just kind of go with a bunch of, you know, 6'4" to 6'6" guys across the front line, but or across your backcourt. But you know, maybe they want to find somebody who can kind of fit into that role where you have size, you have shooting, you have length. So that could be somewhere that they're looking. And I'm also interested, you know, maybe, you know, they go into the season with an open roster spot, because you can do that. You can go in with 14 instead of 15 and just keep that spot open, you know, because we just saw Andre Iguodala got traded to Memphis. The question is, does Memphis keep him? Do the Grizzlies try and trade him, or do they buy him out and allow him to go shop the market himself? Because, you know, I'm not saying that he's the only one, but players like Andre Iguodala, who I'm sure has no interest in being part of a rebuild in Memphis, you know, what can he bring to a contending team? You know, especially if you can get him on the buyout market, that could be of interest. You know, Kyle Korver is also in Memphis. You know, what could he bring to a contending team? Not saying it's the Bucks, but like if he became available, you know, what can you do with that? So, you know, I think figuring out the other moves that are going on in the league, the other guys who are available, you know, the types of, you know, diamonds in the rough that, you know, are unrestricted free agents that you can maybe get for a deal, a minimum deal. You know, there should be guys out there. And so that's the biggest question right now that's facing the Bucks is, which of those guys can they find? Which guys that might normally be more than minimum level players can they entice with their success with Giannis, with their chemistry, with their you know, vertical alignment between the ownership, front office, coaching staff, and players, all that stuff being in lockstep? Who can they entice? Who is willing to take a pay cut? Who can be this year's, you know, Brooke Lopez, who is a highly impactful value signing, and that's gonna be the rest of free agency, barring any major moves.
A nice crisp hour of Bucks talk with Matt Velasquez, Journal Sentinel beat reporter for covering the Milwaukee Bucks, and read everything he has to say at jsonline.com. He is pounding on that keyboard feverishly, trying to keep up with all the craziness of NBA free agency. The Bucks have done some retooling, reshaping, bringing guys back, and Matt's been on top of it. Thanks for joining us, Matt. We have got to let you go, my friend. We'll chat with you real soon, though.
All right. Catch you later.
Find this podcast, the Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. That's where we'll be. We'll catch you again. Whenever there's news, there's bound to be more, so stay tuned. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.